welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated island chained paradise of New Zealand, where everybody has a part-time job as an eco light bulb, which is good for the environment. And my very special guest is coming at us live from the South Island, a place where men are rugged and beer is plentiful. His name is Ben Vigen. Welcome to the program from postmanproductions.org.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Vinnie. We like to think of South Island, the Shire of the Hobbiton, of being out here at the opposite end from Mordor. But every day we turn around, it seems that Mordor seems to be knocking on our doors just a little bit more loudly.
Yes.
You lead off on us there.
Well, we got into a discussion the other day on your broadcast about HAARP and the super typhoon that hit the Philippines. Before we get into that, I just want you to briefly explain to the listeners, you know, you just quickly your qualifications, your publication, plug your radio show, and then we'll get into the discussion if you can.
Awesome. My name's Ben Vigen, as Vinnie's very succinctly said. I am the editor of Postman Productions, which is an online website which includes my radio show on ORFM 105.4 FM, which we do on New Zealand time, 8:30 Wednesday. The paper side of what I've been doing has been for about 11 years. We cover the region of Otago, which for an analogy is on the Hobbiton Times. And basically, that's before I've been doing that. I've been writing books. My specialty is national security services issues. I spent 6 years in the New Zealand Armed Forces, the equivalent of your National Guard. Here would be called the Territorials, where I primarily served in intelligence capacities. And prior to that, I did a degree in political science, specialising in terrorism. For me, this sort of situation is quite interesting because, you know, I don't necessarily kind of like to get into these whole kind of HAARP issues or New World Order Illuminati. For me, I'm just a small-town cop covering small-town issues, but I keep picking up the stories that nobody else wants to run, and I look at the facts from what I understand with my background, and I find myself not being able to shut up, and I end up saying things which I know are not going to be good for my paycheck, they're not going to be good for my social standing, but I do it anyway because... hey, what can stand three generations of New Zealand archery, and that's what we do.
Yeah, because nobody else has got the balls.
I don't know about the balls. I think it's actually the opposite of it. It's like, I was thinking about this last night about my granddad. Like, you know, he really could have brought home to me that there's nothing exciting or glamorous about war. And it's scary. Basically, if you can see something really horrible coming, it scares the crap out of me what I'm seeing happening. Very, very, I've watched this stuff for a long time, but now it's really coming thick and it's fast. And it's the very opposite of balls. It's the case of I don't want to be in that world, so I'm doing everything I can so that I can make people aware of it. And to be quite honest, I don't really fancy my chances, but, you know, if you don't do anything, zero is a little bit of a chance is far greater than zero chance.
Yeah. I mean, there's no guarantees if you try, but there is definitely a guarantee if you don't.
Well, exactly. And the other thing, too, which I have learned over 20 years is that, you know, in the 20 years, I've got a pretty good record of punching well above my weight and being pretty influential here to my colleagues on a number of issues, especially national security. Alistair Thompson from Scoop Media will confirm that I'm probably one of the four journalists in New Zealand investigated in circles, which the New Zealand military categorise as subversive. So there you are. I'm officially on the wanted list. But, you know, it's... I've been covering these issues not because I actually want to, but because nobody else actually will cover these issues.
Are you sure that doesn't have to do with the cowardice of a lot of people, or maybe it's just intellectual dishonesty or incompetence?
Cowardice is a really strange thing because, some people are brave in some areas and some people are afraid in other areas. And, you know, the reality is, you know, once you start to come to deal with some pretty nasty characters, which I've done over the years, and you just really come up close about what they're capable of, you're stupid if you're not scared. So that's where my motivation comes from, is that I can see what these guys can do. I don't think these guys necessarily, my colleagues, a lot of time really understand what they're facing. And at the end of the day, to be fair to them, you know, most of them are pretty decent people that they've got mortgages to pay, they've got, you know, wives and kids' responsibility, which is something I don't have. I've never been at that boat. So I have the luxury of being able to cover stories, which a lot of these guys would like to, but they're trying to raise their kids. So, yeah, okay, they're afraid of different things, but it's really, I think it's a lack of awareness. And again, I bring that back to my grandfather. The education he brought me, he spent 5 years fighting in the front lines of World War II in Egypt, and he really brought home to me what, you know, war is about and what happens if you don't do it. And, you know, I'm not even half the man that he was, but I just look at it and go, this is my country and I'm passionate about it. I'm going to do everything I can, because if I don't, that's what's coming was going to affect my nephews and my nieces and the people that I do love and the people that I don't really want to have to think about politics because they just enjoy life. And I like the fact they do that. You know, that's what I'm here for.
Could you summarize what you think is coming?
Well, you know, the reality is I can summarize very straightforward. The bigger picture is that we live in a world or a globe which is increasingly fierce competition over diminishing resources. And the analogy is quite straightforward. With grim times comes grim politics. And what I feel in my heart of hearts is I feel like I must be like someone, one of those few little journalists sitting around in a cafe in France in 1938 that's actually doing their job and see these tanks all lined up and knows that, you know, what's coming is not going to be good, but most of your colleagues are too busy drinking the Pinot and getting on with life. And that's what I feel, is that I think we're getting pretty close to a full global economic collapse. And I think, you know, one of the interesting side of things is that when I look at the old dilemma, we're going to be talking a lot about what's happening in the South Pacific, which is basically on the surface a clash between China and the United States. But really, when you actually boil down to it, a lot of these guys, their finances are so entwined. It's you know, it's not that good guy, bad guy scenario. At the end of the day, the finance is going to win. I think there will be a conflict, and I think a lot of this conflict will revolve around the need to cull off people anyway. But it really is, at the day, it's a fight between finances, and we're just the pawns and the pieces. So it's not China over here and US over here. It just happens to be the pawns, and we're the end result. We're the people that get stuck in the middle. Getting a little bit closer down to more empirical issues, and that's what I like to do. I'm not really much of a big person. I like to break down to what I can actually know. The reality is, by 2020, the United States Navy has declared that over 60% of their naval forces, I'll put that in context in a second, but 60% of their naval forces will be based in the South Pacific. And the context is that when I was doing my political science degree in 1993, I did a paper critiquing an analyst guy called Richard Hura about the growth of the Soviet threat, because the Soviet Navy was rapidly expanding into the South Pacific. Well, that expansion was actually a 2% expansion, which really consisted of cruise ships and fishing boats with a few odd little signals, and that was about it. We're talking about a 60% expansion into the South Pacific, which shows you what the strategic importance of this my part of the world, Hobbiton, is becoming in the bigger picture. Oil resources are rapidly running out in places like the Middle East. Again, the South Pacific is one of these regions that actually has, and that includes Indonesia, the Philippines, Australasia, Antarctica, New Zealand. We're one of the areas that actually have untapped oil resources. And some of these resources, the powers that be have known against them since the early 1900s. I used to have a book in my possession called Oil Fields of New Zealand, 1905, H.D. Reid. The opening sentence of that book is that New Zealand has more oil than the entire Commonwealth combined. And this book was written in 1900. Since that time, you've seen all the way through that the potential oil reserves of New Zealand have come online every sort of 30, 40 years, but due to the geopolitical consequence, they've never been tapped. Well, now we're heading a situation where those resources, the price of oil just continues to go up and up, and the value of getting that oil out of the ground in New Zealand, which is in plentiful resources, it's there. So suddenly the interest in New Zealand is significant. And, of course, the other issue is the issue of global warming. It doesn't matter what you think what the cause of global warming is, if you're for it or against it. The reality is climate change is occurring, and this has set geopolitical consequences. Even if you have a situation where water levels raised by 1 degree. If you imagine a country, an archipelago like Indonesia, which is 240 million people, its main basic root food crop is rice, which is a crop that grows only on the coastal strip. That 1 degree rise, when you take that into account with increasing typhoons, that means that you're looking at mass starvation, which suddenly means that the way that the regional stability of this region changes. So the whole issue of national alliances or strategic alliances is changing. All of this makes, again, New Zealand a very significant place because we're an island state. So what that basically means is that we're cooled down by the water, so we don't have the same temperature increases as some of these other larger masses. So again, we've got plenty of resources, mineral on land and off the coastal area. We've got a reasonably stable, good agricultural area, which is untapped. We've only got 4 million people living in New Zealand. You know, a country like Japan, I'm not quite sure the stats, I think it's about 120 million, something like that in Japan. Well, same land, land mass in New Zealand, you're talking about 4 million with, you know, heaps, massive amounts of land. We're best known, we produce, you know, nearly, I think it's 60% of the dairy product comes from New Zealand. For the whole world, that's where it comes from, New Zealand. So plenty of milk, plenty of oil. We're not going to have to worry about our agricultural water shortages. So the strategic importance, as the Minister of Science, Peter Hodgins, confirmed with me when I interviewed him in 2008, was we're becoming hot property. We might glow in the dark, but we're still glowing in the dark a lot less than Fukushima or a whole bunch of other regions that have, you know, lack of resources, increasing populations, and now with things like Fukushima, increasing population properties. So you fast forward it.
Can I ask you, do you think that New Zealand could be facing, in a crisis, invasion?
Well, the reality is the invasion began in New Zealand in 19, began well over 30 years ago. In fact, you know, the indigenous population of New Zealand would argue it began 150 years ago. But the recent colonial invasion of New Zealand has begun since the 1970s. Since the 1970s, and there's a very good file out there called the Opal File, and it should be read in the context of when this file turned up in the late, the mid-1980s, it appeared, bang, overnight. This is pre-internet, pre-Facebook. Virtually every single significant journalist in New Zealand was sent a copy of this document, which talked about the oil and mineral resources and the planned takeover of New Zealand. At that time, everybody laughed at this document out of the water. Went, oh, what a bunch of conspiracy theory stuff. There's no oil in New Zealand, blah, 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 blah. Well, you read that document today in context of then and now, virtually everything in that document has come to fruition, and everything in that document, if you actually go and do the empirical research, which unfortunately none of my colleagues ever bothered to do because it too challenged their assumption basis, a lot of that can be confirmed. In fact, you know, for me, that document was a big part of my life because at that time I was in the territorials, I was involved in attached to counterintelligence, and I was passed this document and I read it. And my first response was, what a load of rubbish. But at one point, it turned around and made reference to a submarine base off the coast of Fiordland. And, you know, it explained something to your listeners. Like, even though I was intelligence, we have images of, you know, top secret documents, the reality is you get a clearance signal. And I, in my entire time, I never needed to. I never saw a document that was actually based above restricted. I only ever saw one document in my entire life, which was actually classified secret, which was a document, which was a map, which we used on an exercise, Silicon Kiwi, which actually had this area on the referred to in the Opal files marked as with a stamp, secret. And that's when I read the document, wait a minute, there's something in this. And I started talking to friends of mine that worked in the oil industry. My best friend's father was, in fact, the last guy to fly out of Kuwait. He was intelligence officer for Halliburton, and I've been, you know, had access to him for over 20 years now. And the bottom line was I became aware that what we were facing was an economic takeover of New Zealand. Now, to fast forward, what we're now starting to see is we've moved from the economic aspect, and this is both, again, you know, it's not a simple America versus China situation. We looked at multinationals which go, as I like to call them, bastards without borders, and moved into New Zealand. We've had consecutive governments over the last 30 years and stripped our infrastructure and privatised our key assets that make our country run efficiently. And what we're now starting to have is we're starting to see the development of hard assets. And what I mean by this is we're seeing military facilities going up in very quick process in New Zealand. And to kind of quickly run you a map down New Zealand, you have at the top of New Zealand, you have Waiheke Island. Now, I still haven't seen the hard data on this, but I've got pretty reliable sources from two or three people who have actually, you know, this is, you know, we're talking about filmmakers and people that have got access to satellite imagery. I've had at least three confirmations that there is a key facility has moved in at Waiheke Island, which is tied up with American signal facilities. We have massive expansions in places like Wairua. In fact, when I was speaking on Wednesday night afterwards, I was actually speaking to a guy involved in the military, and he informed me 3 years ago, large building for structures were actually built and put in the back of Wairua, which is our main military base in the North Island there. They were put in there for the direct purposes of the US Marine Brigade that's based in Hawaii so that they could come over to New Zealand and put in for winter training. Now, this was 3 years ago when, at this stage, for the American listeners, we have a policy in New Zealand where we will not accept nuclear ships into our port unless... we will not let ships unless they tell us whether they're nuclear or not, because we're nuclear free. Now, as a consequence of this, America's decided that they won't train with us and they won't let our ships into their port. Well, 3 years ago, they started putting in the facilities when a government, which is, our public do not want this change, but 3 years ago, our government started putting in hardcore concrete structures for brigade-sized units to move into Wairuru. We've seen in Linton facility, Linton has been massively expanded. Linton is, of course, the central base that when Americans were based here during World War II, this was a logistical base. And a bit of an issue there was that the major international exercise that's on in New Zealand right this moment that'll end in New Zealand on Thanksgiving Day, which is the same day when the comet Ison is at its closest point to the sun, which has direct links to the heart, which we'll go into. But... The military guys, Southern Kapiti was where the Americans were based during World War II. They had up to 40,000 troops. All that area has now been re-expanded and redeveloped. We've seen increased signals facilities in both in Wairuru and Wellington. We've seen expansion of GCS, which is our electronic spy service, like the NSA. We've seen them merge with the New Zealand SAS, which is like your kind of CIA. So the GCSB in New Zealand, all its key hardcore facilities are actually run by American officers of the NSA, which basically means they are running our GCSB. So when we merge with our domestic intelligence service, the NZSI, that means that the US will now be running our intelligence apparatus. And as of 2007, we changed the law, which now basically means that the term terrorism is defined not by the New Zealand Prime Minister's office on the ninth floor, as it always was. It's now actually defined by mid-level bureaucrats, analysts of the NSA. So they're actually defining that, that's why I'm officially on the subversive list. And imagine, so are you, Vinny.
I
hope I has been expanded.
We're coming to break now. We'll be right back. Ben Vigen, ladies and gentlemen, postmanproductions.org. You don't want to miss this.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. I wake up every day is a daydream. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And just bear in mind, I have a bit of financial difficulty at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. The bank accounts are dry. It costs them nearly $300 a week just to survive. And on top of that, I have a credit card bill. I haven't got any gas in my car. I need some new equipment as well. I would really love to have a second computer next to me so that at the end of the day, after the shows, I process a lot of video stuff. But the thing is, it's such an intense operation processing video that everything else on the computer freezes, and basically I can't work for about 3 hours or something like that while that's happening. So it would be really lovely to have a second computer. What I really need, ladies and gentlemen, is you to go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. today, subscribe for $5 a month. One of those little small regular monthly payments. If we get a lot of people doing that, it becomes very, very cumulative and it starts to work out very well. There's a bank account there as well on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com homepage that you can go to and you can start up a piece through your normal bank account and what have you. The reason why I asked to do this is because the listeners are the people who benefit from this program. The activists themselves, people like Ben and what have you, they can't afford to pay somebody to give them airtime or promo or anything like that. It's actually you, the listener, who must support them and people like myself. I do this for the greater good of my country, your country, this entire world, because we're all inextricably linked together, and it is the information, the purging of humanity's ignorance, that is the only thing I believe that will be capable of getting us out of this corrupt system in the first place. Because the only reason it was even capable of being set up, the only reason it was capable of keeping on continuing as it is now, is because people are not aware of it. Please support me and support me regularly, because I am helping to make people aware, and I am giving the activists and the whistleblowers and the doctors and lawyers and politicians and everything, every single kind of spectrum you can conceive of, gets a platform on this radio show. If there is anybody that I haven't interviewed yet, and that list is growing smaller and smaller by the day, please contact me either through the Facebook or email on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and I will interview whoever you want me to. Seriously, there is no holds barred. I don't really mind, okay? This is no taboo topics. This is the only network in the world that is brave enough to let me do the show in this format that I want to. It's open slather. Everybody gets a platform, everybody gets to be heard, and everybody is together in this fight. That's my philosophy. So please, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, donate, or please subscribe for a couple of dollars a month. Thank you. Now, back to my very special guest, Ben Vidgen.
Hey, man, I love the way you do that. And you do such a good job, so people out there do support him, because I think Vinnie is a very rare and valuable commodity to our media, and it's kind of like, you're a bit like the canary in the cage, Vinny. If you weren't there, people would suddenly would be realising how important you were.
You'd be surprised how many emails I get from New Zealanders who are now living overseas, who had given up on life and given up on New Zealand until they heard this show and realised, oh my God, there actually is somebody in New Zealand doing something about the New World Order. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, well, as you said, like, you know, I think sometimes you and I, we use different language. I'm more of a person that refers to, you know, 1% is all I talk about. I look at it in terms of fiscals. You prefer to use terms like the New World Order and Illuminati. To me, different names are the same.
I use all sorts of terms. It's semantics, because we all mean
exactly
the same thing.
Exactly, and it all ends up at the same end line. So, you know, people get really bent out of shape, and you can hear them argue. Sometimes it's really funny, because you discover that actually they're in agreement. They're just simply using different semantics, and that's...
Yeah.
That's the issue. There seems to be sometimes a lack of methodology and looking at things critically. And this is, you know, when we start to get into the subject of heart, you know, this is what I find really amazing. Like, I turn around and I look at people saying, oh, no, that can't happen. And they're throwing up all these arguments which aren't actually based on looking at things from a logical viewpoint. It's finding facts that will fit their preconceived social assumptions, as opposed to looking at the established bits that can be reinforced, corroborated, collaborated, and looking at that argument, letting the facts fall for what they actually are. You know, this is, I mean, maybe this is a good time to dive into the whole HAARP issue.
Yeah, there was a number of people. I believe Dutch Sintz is somebody who you've made reference to. Could you explain that?
Well, okay, to put it in context, right now we have at the moment, we're having our biggest, largest international exercise that's been held in New Zealand. Originally was released under the title, the media released under the title Southern Kapiti, which is actually an error I did pick up and ran with. Then, however, it was actually the media corrected itself, and the exercise has been planned for a number of years. It's actually called Southern Katapo. Katapo is the native poison spider of New Zealand. And this is an exercise that, just like the earthquake that happened in Christchurch, they all needed to do this drill, and gosh darn it, an earthquake occurred, and they had all the equipment they needed. Now, the exercise we're having, the significance of the exercise we're having in New Zealand is significant on two levels. One is it involves over 500 US Marines. None of this has been mentioned in the media. This is the biggest deployment of US soldiers to New Zealand since the ANZUS row. It was announced on the same day that it was announced that US ships, New Zealand warships, were now allowed back into the US ports. So we have huge presence of these soldiers, and yet this is not deemed newsworthy. The second thing, which is, you know, even more kind of obvious, is that this exercise is basically, it's a counterinsurgency exercise, that's a counterterrorism exercise, combined with an amphibious operation. Now, this is, as the exercise explains, is the new direction that New Zealand Armed Forces go. We are now going to become an amphibious operation. Well, this is kind of a little bit significant in itself because, A, we don't actually have any landing crafts in New Zealand, not any of any significant numbers anyway. Secondly, when you do amphibious operations, you need fighter wing air support. Well, we sold all our fighter jets, so basically what the New Zealand Defence Department is telling us is that our military has now been designed to work in the Pacific, but only with a bigger power. So we are useless without we have to operate with this bigger power. When you look around logically, that logical power would be the United States of America. The second part of this exercise is the scenario is, for the purpose of the exercise, the South Island of New Zealand.
No worries, man. Can I interject something? The position of New Zealand in terms of being used with military, there are two articles in mainstream media within the past couple of years. One I found very significant, one of my listeners sent this to me, and it said that they were dredging Auckland Harbour to allow larger ships in. Now, I found this very interesting because Auckland is our largest harbour and we are capable of having the world's largest cruise ships in there.
Yep.
What's larger than the world's largest cruise ships?
You're talking about a US aircraft carrier. This is exactly what they've actually done in Tauranga as well as a consequence of the MV Reina shipping disaster. At the same time, Australia has announced that it's now going to have 2,500 US Marines permanently based in Darwin. Again, an aircraft carrier fleet, permanent base. The Samoan News did an article called Connecting the Dots, which talks about a cable running from Australia, which they linked into this build-up of US troops and oil resources in Australia, into Samoa, where America's going to be building another base. This cable, it's a $430 million cable, will then run into Northland. The consent application, resource consent hearings, has been granted by the Northland Regional Government. So it's not about if it is going to happen. That will then run into the United States, from Samoa into New Zealand.
The second article that I wish to make reference to, maybe you can tell these people to keep quiet in the background there. Second article that was referred to me was a change in New Zealand roading laws, specifically who the police and emergency services can and cannot pull over, because we have currently under New Zealand law, you cannot stop parliamentary vehicles. You can't stop the Prime Minister's limousine. You cannot stop emergency vehicles, and you cannot stop New Zealand military vehicles. That law was allegedly amended to include foreign military vehicles that cannot be stopped on New Zealand roads.
Well, that's because we signed the Washington Agreement, which is a memorandum with the United States government signed in just after the Christchurch earthquake, which states that any American troops that are operating in New Zealand now operate under U.S. jurisdiction. This is very similar to the memorandum that's just been signed with the Tongan government with New Zealand, so that any New Zealand troops that are operating in Tonga can then operate under the authority of New Zealand, not Tonga, which is, of course, right next to Fiji, which is central to U.S. Maritime operations in the Pacific. And this whole scenario, this exercise, Operation Catapult, is basically about the getting rid of the current Fijian regime, which is the becoming very friendly with China. So what you're basically talking about is moves to make sure that the South Pacific is firmly under the sphere of control of the US. And again, when I say the US, I'm not talking about the US government or US people.
I disagree. We need to use a different term. It's not the US, it's NATO. New Zealand is now signed up to NATO. This is the world army.
Yeah, you're completely. It's the Western multinational sphere of influence. You're completely correct. It's bastards without borders, but mostly Western bastards. So moving back, you know, this is the situation was that when all these events were happening in the Pacific that I started noticing, you know, this base being built here, base being built here, I turned around and I sort of thought, well, let's have a look at that little typhoon, you know, because sometimes typhoons happen and they're just typhoons. So not everything is heart-related. And I started to have a look, and the first piece that I came across was a guy by, probably you'll be able to correct me with the name, Dutchmans?
Dutchmans. Yeah.
Well, you know, he picked up. He was the first point which I thought, hey, this is interesting. Was that he picked up at the time of the typhoon that's just hit the Philippines that there was an electromagnetic anomaly, and this is something that I've seen in a lot of earthquakes which fit the heart pattern going all the way back to the Indonesian earthquake, and even all the way back to the meteorite earthquake that exploded over Perth in May 1993, which I'll get back to hopefully at some stage. But and all these earthquakes have always shown severe signs that the atmosphere is suffering from electromagnetic turbulence. So I thought, okay, that's number one, check on the list. So then what he did using Google Earth was he went and had a look where the signal strength coming was, and he discovered that it was a U.S. military facility. So that's tick two on the list. Well, when he closed in a little bit further, he actually found out that it was part of a unit which is called Superdawn, which for me is a triple check on the list because down here in New Zealand, we also have Superdawn. We have one in an Arawara Bay, which is, again, one of the areas of focus of this current military exercise. And we have another one at Birdling Flats in Christchurch, which is actually acts just about the epicenter of where the major Christchurch earthquake clusters have occurred. Now, Dutch is, I think, a little bit wrong at one point, that he sort of, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that Superdawn is actually the weapons end of HAARP. It's not. Really all it's doing, as far as I can assess, is making sure that they know that it's good flying conditions for HAARP. But it basically measures what's happening in the atmosphere and lets you know if it's a good time to go weapons hot. What is interesting, however, is that when I did a little bit more further checking was, in April of 2013, the US Navy moved the XB-1, which is the mobile naval version of HAARP, directly into that area. So that is the weapons end. And again, this is the area that basically Dutch is talking about. Well, you know, okay, so I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. So then I started to look around and I noticed that there was also an earthquake that occurred not too long ago. And I moved in on the earthquake and discovered that it hit the exact same spot, epicenter, as where this typhoon occurred. And when you go online, and it's interesting recently, because I've been commenting about this probably for about 4 years, and I'm probably one of the key people have pointed out the forensic signatures that occurred before HAARP. That, you know, and it's interesting because a lot of those Google signatures now, when you go looking for stuff, you can't find them. I'm pretty convinced that there's been filter blocks put on place. But when you look into the comments of major newspapers, you can still find those things, but you have to look in the comment section of newspapers. And sure enough, you have local people in the 7.8 earthquake area of Philippines in Cebu commenting on sonic booms, big lightning flashes, rumbling signs of electromagnetic, all lead up 2 weeks. And this is something that, in writing, since the Indonesian earthquake, before the Indonesian earthquake, I've been writing about again and again and again. During the Christchurch earthquake, Boxing Day, I was online posting on like back that saying, hey guys, look what's on the front page of the newspaper. We had one of these big, huge flashes that have lit up the whole sky. And then the following day, we had an earthquake. So online, on these newspaper sections, you are finding on-the-ground intelligence telling you that, yes, these same signals. So that's tick number four. The fifth tick was that I turned around to look at was, I thought, well, you know, why would you attack the Philippines? You know, Philippines is a nice place, and I like Filipino people. You know, what could you possibly do against them? Well, when I looked at the area that you're actually talking about, the epicenter for the typhoon and the earthquake, it turns out that this is the central of the Okta oil fields. And again, this is one of the common denominators that I've seen in all these areas, that they're either in areas where they're looking for oil or areas where they're basically trying to keep that. You know, in the case of, for example, Fukushima, you get rid of all the nuclear power plant, who's the biggest winner? Well, the oil consumption ban is just pushed up, so you can imagine what that does for oil prices. If you damage the oil fields in the Philippines, and you can reduce the supply, again, that pushes oil prices up. And this is a common pattern that I've seen happen time and time again, either it has an impact on oil speculation or it has an impact on the control of the oil fields.
And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Ben Fidgen. PostmanProductions.org is his website. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about business time. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. So, We only have about 10 plus minutes left here, Ben, for you to lay out the details and allegations. Was HAARP used to influence the so-called super typhoon that hit the Philippines recently?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reality is you can't say categorically, yes, it was, because it's a little bit like smoking and cigarettes. Unless you actually have all the lab reports from the, you know, the tobacco companies, you know, you can only point to the correlations. And what I'm saying to you is that any weapon, and this is what one of the things I did in the military was artillery intelligence, any weapon, whether it's a pea shooter or an atom bomb, has a forensic signature pattern. And when you start seeing a repeat of the same ordnance, the same personnel, the same money trail, the same forensic patterns, and this is the case we're talking about, the Aurora Borealis securing before, and the sonic booms, the mass dolphin white waves. When it happens again and again and again, you know, it's a little bit naive to say this is just a coincidence theory, and I don't believe in coincidence theories. What I also point out is that a lot of people, I mean, I was looking at some of the comments on Dutch Sense reports, and you know, people that trying to be very knowledgeable saying, oh, this is ignorance, you can't do this. Well, they really haven't done their research. They don't know the science. They really don't know what they're talking about. Because here's the reality. The Secretary of the U.S. Secretary of Defense in 1998, William Cohen, at the Georgetown Symposium on Weapons of Mass Destruction, keynote held by Senator Sam Nunn, who sat on every single Arms Senate Committee that you can name for the last 25 years, stated uncategorically that there is now the technology to cause earthquakes, trigger volcanoes, and affect weather manipulation. So all these people out there on the internet, they're trying to tell me that they have better access to data than the Secretary of the U.S. of Defense? Well, I don't think so. Now, the other point, too, is that you've got to trace the paper trail. The Secretary of Defense made his remarks at the symposium chaired by Sam Nunn 2 years after Sam Nunn had sat on a Senate investigation into whether or not weapons of mass destruction, oh, this is what we're talking about, geo-warfare weapons were tested in Australia's outback in 1993. This investigation was based upon the same data that also triggered off a Senate investigation in the Australian government in around 1996. This investigation was caused, and I'll be quite clear, the conclusion states, the public conclusions of these two inquiries was inconclusive. Not it wasn't or was, just we're not going to go any further. And anyone who knows anything about public releases of these sort of matters know that they always end up inconclusive. The point was the data was significant enough to begin with that they held an investigation and that the Secretary of Defense afterwards said, yep, this technology exists. And that's what I'm going on. I'm sorry, maybe there are people out there smarter, but when the Secretary of the U.S. Secretary of Defense says this weapon technology exists, I sit up and I listen. Now, what actually happened was they had an attack in Tokyo in 1995 carried out by a cult called Unshirinko. What emerged during the Australian media was that this cult had actually based itself in Australia 2 years beforehand, and the Greens MP for Western Australia, Christine Chamarine, had turned around in 1993. This is all can be corroborated by hands and records and parliamentary records. And she asked the Minister of Immigration, Nick Volker, she said, you know, how come this whole bunch of Japanese guys have been found all this exotic technology and you're trying to hide soaps and chemicals and hand soaps and shampoo, and you haven't done anything? You've given them a $50 fine and let them stay in the country. And the Minister of Immigration said, I think you'd be mistaken, but we'll look into that. Well, we never heard anything ever again until after the sarin attack. They had the investigation. It turns out the reason why they were allowed to stay in the country was that the Australian Federal Police had these guys under surveillance. And this is according to the police reports that are cited in the Senate investigation. Now, that investigation was sparked by one key incident, which a researcher called Harry Mason uncovered, was that they had a huge Aurora Borealis exploded over Perth in early May 1993. It was the equivalent of over 100 Hiroshimas. It occurred at the exact moment that they had an earthquake 3 kilometres west of Laverton, Western Australia, where they have a major electronic warfare station. It was the exact spot that cult had moved into 35 days beforehand. And now, where this Aurora Borealis, or meteorite, as it was called, a meteorite, was supposed to have landed, was the exact spot where this earthquake occurred. That, as a consequence of all those things, that's why the Australian Federal Police were investigating these guys to carry out, figure out whether they were doing weapons mass research. Apparently, the results were inconclusive, but what we do know today is the entire Australian super EMP weapon is based on Russian black market technology. Well, guess what? That's what the Australian Federal Police said. That's where the Japanese have got their technology from. So the point being, you go all the way back to 1993, and you can actually go back 40 years if you really want to, but from 93 up to now, there's plenty of evidence that shows you that this technology, that billions of dollars have been spent into it, governments are taking it seriously. So when events like typhoons happen, or earthquakes like Christchurch, we should be having legitimate racial discussions about whether this is a possibility instead of burying our hands in sand and ignoring the key forensic evidence. Because that evidence is again happening again and again. We get to the point, it's the same events are happening which trace back to the same ordinance, the same personnel, and the same money trail again, again, and again.
Mm. It becomes undeniable. And yet, people still deny it.
You can argue against it, but you know, it seems like when you turn around and you look at some of the statements that were made on Dutch census reports, and they say, oh, you know, HAARP doesn't have enough power to do this. Well, first of all, we now acknowledge that fracking can actually cause seismic stimulation. Well, HAARP, even at the lower level, is hugely more powerful than fracking. So, well, why not? But, however, they also, because they don't know what they're talking about, the reality is HAARP itself isn't the weapon. It's simply the key of the ignition. The Earth's natural energy is what's, or electromagnetic energy is what's going on. Simply HAARP generates a signal which stimulates existing energy which occurs in our upper atmosphere, which is plasmic based, which is then redirected back into our core. That causes the stimulation. And they tend to pick times when there are solar flares going on, because this is good to counter propagation, which is basically signal loss. You'll see again, and you'll see this in the Philippines case, the grassroots report suddenly gives you a huge swell of reports of chemtrails occurring before. And because what they're doing is they're spraying barium, which is a refractive property. It helps signal counter signal propagation. Once you actually understand the science, and once you actually do something really crazy, you go and talk to atmospheric science, and you go and talk to actual weapons researchers instead of talking to geologists who don't know anything about the military at all, you end up realizing that this is actually a very plausible science, and it's not that complicated.
It's about releasing potential energy. The crusts of the Earth are kind of either pulling apart or pushing together. In the case where they're pulling apart, it's kind of like a rubber band on a slingshot. All that the HAARP does is let the rubber band go, and the slingshot does the rest.
It's even simpler than that. Basically, you know, what they will acknowledge on the... By the way, we're going to point out something. When I use HAARP, I use it metaphorically. HAARP itself insulation is no longer actually running in terms of, because they don't need it to be in Alaska anymore. They're able to move the facility around and redirect it. So I am speaking not in the literal context. I'm speaking in terms of the use of EM as a weaponry base. But basically what you're talking about is putting a pot of water on the stove and heating up. And that's all that HAARP does. It's a microwave. It's a giant microwave that acknowledge they use this for certain mineral resources, for you know, bunkers in the ground. They push that signal deep into the ground, stimulates the basically the plasma energy, and just like, you know, bang. Just like sticking a plug into the electric socket.
Was this also...
It's not the weapon. It's only the key in the ignition.
Was this also to be used for what they call ground-penetrating radar?
Yeah, and this is what Superdome is. Superdome is the what they call in Australia, is they call it the over-the-horizon radar. And Superdome is one aspect of it. And again, what you'll find is pre-Christchurch, when you used to do the Google search, the words HAARP would quite happily come up into all these, you know, Superdome documents themselves. Since I've been out there being quite vocal, the documents have been edited, and it's much, much more harder to find. But yes, basically, Superdome and HAARP were intermerged into each other, and Superdome was part of the over-the-horizon radar network, a global network, which, you know, it started off as 80 little aerials in Alaska. It still used up more energy than most of anything else in the United States of America. It's now gone to a worldwide network, and every year they've just chucked more and more billions and billions and billions of dollars. And yet people turn around and say, oh, no, it's only a weather atmospheric for measuring the weather. You know, that's what the U.S. military, and by the way, by the point, U.S. military law actually quite states quite clearly that no money should be invested in any scientific projects unless there's direct military applications. So if it doesn't have military applications, the U.S. military is actually breaking its own law.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if the U.S. military was breaking laws, especially their own. That seems to be the general rule of thumb, actually.
But the basic point I'm saying is that, you know, when you turn around and you look at a lot of these arguments, you know, the things that they put, the counter arguments put up on against Hart, like, why would they take the Philippines? It's like, well, people making these remarks, they don't have any background in political science or intelligence. Why don't they go talk to people that can give them, you know, oil resources, geopolitical alliances? There's lots of reasons why that becomes a very logical area to control. So, you know, instead of just throwing things out randomly without doing any research, or making assumptions, it would be nice once in a while to see these people actually take something and go away, research, and come up with, I don't necessarily have to say that, you know, this typing was caused by Harp. I can't say that. I'm not sitting in Harp Central Command, but what I can say to you is I have seen a series of signals happen again and again and again and again, and this one is matching up. It's got a very close overlay with everything else I've seen beforehand. And part of that, by the way, is the fact that when these events tend to occur, you find that, gosh darn it, there's happens to be a drill going on at the time. Well, this is what's happening in New Zealand. It's happening that the biggest significant factor was that the George Washington was ready to leave Hong Kong 2 days before the event, and it got to the Philippines within 24 hours. Now, aside from the fact that anyone who knows anything about aircraft carriers will tell you that, you know, that's quite amazing to get a ship out of port within 24 hours. Yeah, how come the ship just happens to have all the ready-to-eat meals, the blankets, the tents, all the supplies ready? If you would have thought that that would require at least another 20 to 48 hours loading up to get the right supplies for the right disaster. No, because they just happened to have a drill in the Philippines a couple of months beforehand, which means that all that stuff is already there.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the exact same phenomenon that we saw with the Haiti quake, US aid right by there. Same exact phenomenon same that Christ we saw Church. with the Boxing Day tsunami and the Christchurch. We had 1,000 troops and a ship full of supplies in the harbour, not 15-minute drive from Christchurch, you know? These things are becoming so suspicious that to say that there's no evidence for it is the height of ignorance. Ben Vigen, ladies and gentlemen, postmanproductions.org. Go and check him out and also check out his radio show too. Links will be on his website. We'll be right back after the break. Don't you go anywhere.
Thanks, Vinny.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, soon to be the world's largest US naval base. And my very special guest is Simon. I'm not joking, by the way. My very special guest is Simon Kaiwai, coming at us from live from an undisclosed location. Those of you who have seen the videos have seen him being beaten ruthlessly by police in front of his pregnant wife in the grass on his own property because he paid his electric bill. Simon, welcome to the program.
Yes, well, it's not really a good claim to fame, but I'll run with it, huh?
Yeah. I'll take what I can get, you know, make a lemonade out of lemons here.
Yeah, it's funny. Hey, you know, I just wanted to, thanks again for having me on the show and looking forward to getting into it with you. But I just wanted to focus this show on Brand, Russell Brand, whether to bash the brand or not bash the brand, because... Yeah, I think we've seen a bit of his stuff out there. I came across him with some pretty funny speeches that he gave, like the one in the GQ Awards thing. Did you catch that? He just took the Mickey of the prize. Said, "Oh, you know, GQ. It's the same with Boss. They used to make the Nazi uniforms. You know, you used to have to adjust the crotch area and all." Anyway, he's a really funny guy. Next minute, he's actually putting out some pretty big talk about calling for revolution. The Paxman interview, and he's saying, "Look, we've got problems. I don't vote. I've never voted, because you just." And he says it quite eloquently. I think in the later segments we'll get into this interview, so I won't go too much into it now. But suffice it to say, a couple of days after he came out and said this pretty agreeable stuff to me, it's interesting to see elements of the alternative community, if you want to say that, alternative media and alternative research, come out and start bashing the guy. So instead of discussing the points that he is making, they're now looking at, well, look at who he's married to. And she's related to this Rothschild, and he's talking about wealth distribution, but he's worth £15 million. He's an obvious stooge. And so there was this big effort from the likes of Thomas Sheridan. I think he took a leading role in it, and at the same time as bashing this guy Brand, whose videos were going viral, he's launching a blog and trying to direct people to a blog beyond where his scope of research was, which was psychotics, and not just him. Arthur Christian, who has the, I think, what's his website? Do you know that one in Australia?
Yeah, I remember. I've had him on the show before. I can't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, something to do with not love for life, but something like that. But anyway, he's been blogging and, blogging his journey and stuff like that. And he does the same thing too. He's an agent. Next thing you know, James Corbett, who has a sort of a news type thing where he doesn't get right into the research, but he shares it with a co-host. One of their topics was Russell Brand, and just regurgitating this guilty by association, not actually critiquing the ideas that this guy Brand's putting out or why he might be putting these ideas out there, just attacking the personality. And so, I was curious. There were other researchers too and other people that are active on Facebook and with a big following bashing the Brand. And so I thought, okay, let's take a look at it. There's a tool called reverse speech. Remember, you've had a guy, David Oakes, on the show.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah. And then one of his reversals, he played some reversals. One of his reversals was of Alex Jones saying, "I am Satan." Yeah. Anyway, this is a tool. I don't know if many of your listeners know about it, but at the same time as we speak forward, we actually speak in reverse. It depends on the rapport of the person that you're speaking with as to how frequent these reversals are. Sometimes they come from the conscious mind, like an instruction to self, sometimes from the subconscious, and sometimes from the deep unconscious. The one commonality across all of this is it's always your truth in context to what you're speaking about. So it's a very good truth detecting tool. And so I applied it to that Paxman interview of Russell Brand that everyone took one specific quote of what he was saying, and thought, well, what is this guy actually saying? And it was quite revealing.
What did he say?
Well, we'll get into that. We're actually going to try and play the recordings and play the whole Paxman interview in the later segments. But what do you think of the pattern that they play when they try and, some information comes out and potentially it could get people to go to the next step? What's the first step that we see them take in response to that? From my experience, the first step that they take is to discredit the person, not to discuss the ideas. So what you see is a very orchestrated campaign against Brand pop up overnight, all of these things. For instance, one of the things was that he was at some ceremony or other and he was holding an Obey keyring, and he had it there and they were like, "Look, it's got the pentagram on it. It says Obey," he's laughing at us. But I mean, have you seen the movie They Live, Vinny?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's another context to it. So the people with their sunglasses on, without the shades can't see the reality that's around them, that they're just getting programmed to obey. Perhaps the guy's just taking an opportunity to say, this is what's going on here. Perhaps, right?
Well, it's very difficult to prove intent. So what you do is you have a look at actions. Okay, so has Russell Brand come out in support of the establishment, any establishment in terms of current governments or corporations in the way that they're acting that truth movement people discredit and don't like?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen any of that. He seems to be very anti-establishment in his views from what I've seen. But, of course, what we see ain't necessarily all that's there. There might be other things. There might be no secret recordings and whatnot. But I find what's actually good about people critiquing him, whether or not their critiques are valid or have merit, is that it proves that the Messiah complex that many members of this so-called truth movement suffer from is starting to wane. And when somebody comes out saying everything you want to hear, and you, instead of following them blindly and think, oh, this is my savior, he's going to save me, we start thinking critically. And I think that's actually a very, very good and appropriate response. However, if it is not coinciding with information gathering and verification of said information, if it is instead just blind assumption based upon personal opinion, then that's not good. Because, I don't want a Messiah complex, but I also don't want a BS complex as well. Okay, it's not one or the other. It's something in between where you've got truth. Okay,
yeah. Yeah, exactly the point. Because, okay, he may be, he may have fallen in love with a girl who happens to be in one of those families, he married the girl. Okay, let's reverse the analysis and look at people. Where do you work? Or do you work for a bank? I bet you got hundreds of listeners right now who are working for a bank, and yet we're happy to accuse the Rockefeller families and these elites, the banking elites, they're spoiling the world, but if you plug in 40 hours a week, you take their paycheck and you play your role as their cog in that very same thing, does it make you guilty of their crimes?
No. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But does it give you the moral ground to or are you being a hypocrite looking at someone like Brand and just assuming, based on his association, that he's guilty?
Yeah. Did he say anything? Did he do anything that actually does support the New World Order agenda? Because when agents come into our midst, they always do that. They can't help themselves, and they're fairly easy to expose. And if the best somebody can come up with is he's married to somebody who's related in some obscure way to a scumbaggery family, there's many people who are related to that scumbaggery family who freaking hate their family's history, who don't like the agenda that's being put forward. That's proof of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And so we have to look at his actions. And regarding his wealth, again, if the guy's got money, okay. If he's got a lot of money, no talent, and he's somehow come into it, you could say, there's probably scumbaggery involved there.
Yeah.
Right. But the guy's got talent. I mean, you look at him. He's getting the attention because he's got talent. He's a go-getter. He's put himself out there. His life's been a bit wild, but he's got the gift of the gab. He's obviously got a quick mind, and he's progressing on his journey. I'm sure there are a lot of things in his past that he's not proud of, but let's look at what he's doing now, And he's talking about, he's calling for a massive redistribution of wealth, which would be against his own interest because he's above the average, So there's a guy who's actually, that's a selfless thing. I think a lot of people that are in the middle, the supposed middle class, like there ever was one, like it will remain, are hearing that and thinking, socialism, we're at risk, we're going to have more taxes upon us. Yet at the same time, he's focusing the attention on the very, very ultra-rich, saying these are the ones and their corporations, and the corporations influence the politics, and so I don't want to partake in it. We need a new system. I'm not sure exactly what that system is, but I know I don't want to participate in that one, and we need to find a new one. Yeah. So this for me is the point of my point of disappointment with the reaction. I believe he's had a disinformation campaign on him, but we're going to get into what he said and the like. But I'm just saying, people have defamed him. Haven't taken the opportunity that he created by putting these ideas into the mainstream media through his talent, and discuss those ideas to work towards identifying a solution. This problem, reaction, solution thing that they do, right? If we just get stuck on the problem and the reaction, then they're going to be the only ones that have the solution.
Yeah, and guilt by association is just a logical fallacy in and of its face, you know, just because, like, for example, myself, almost everybody who comes on the show hates somebody else who's come on the show, and every now and again they'll attack me and say, oh, you're supporting this person, I hate you, Vinny, I'm never going to come on your show again. I'm like... I'm just open slather, man. I don't really. I'm like the founding fathers wish the US to have no entangled alliances, you know. but again, this is what happens when somebody comes out instead of actually listening to their message, analyzing what it is that they're saying. We play the guilt by association methodology and then demonize them.
Yeah.
We don't. Yeah. We're shooting the messenger rather than listening to the message.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to be guilty of attacking people, but I will name names that have been a part of this attacking the personality thing, because some of them, namely this Thomas Sheridan, and I had some respect for his work. You know, like, it was great to be able to put a finger on it. Hey, okay, it's because of psychopaths. You know, the psychopathy that a lot of these things are happening. You know, but. He's exhibiting, from a stand back perspective, the same traits when he's putting out there stuff that could potentially hurt someone's feelings. You know, is harmful to someone who's actually putting his nads on the line. You know, like, he's already lost this brand, has already lost his MTV show. He's not going to be invited to an award ceremony again. I can tell you that. And he's doing it on his own merits. And here's this guy Thomas Sheridan trying to defame him without evidence, just hearsay, and guilt by association, as you're saying, and launch his brand, his blog. Now, when I went on there and talked on his Facebook page, you know, questioning, hey, man, just provide some evidence and this and that and question these things, his response was just to block me. You know, that's what a psychopath does, isn't it?
Well, no, not normally. Psychopaths don't like to block people who are attacking them. What they actually do is they make you their enemy, and they start attacking you, defaming you, and sucking energy off of you. Blocking is actually what somebody who's not a psychopath does, because non-psychopaths don't like to be exposed to attacks, criticism, and things of that nature. Like, they just get kind of frustrated. Whereas psychopaths, if they're exposed to telling lies and so on and so forth, what they do is they just tell more lies to cover up for their original lies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah, well, I think I take Thomas's other advice, which is, you know, when you see a psychopath, run for the hills, you know. That's good advice.
yeah. But there's another thing. It's interesting that you should mention this. Is Thomas Sheridan acting sort of like a psychopathic methodology? I love Thomas, man. We had some great interviews with him, especially the psychopath roundtable. He gave me James Corbett and Jay Widener. Plus Thomas Sheridan on the same psychopath roundtable is just absolutely phenomenal. Now, during that week that we did that psychopath roundtable, we also had an Archon roundtable and a Djinn demonology roundtable with a number of different researchers from eclectic fields. Now, psychopath, Archon, Djinn, demon, whatever you want to call them, they all seem to embody the exact same characteristics in ancient and even current texts. And what they all concluded, each and every one of these roundtable discussions, regardless of the fact that their fields were relatively different looking at similar issues, was that they all agreed on one thing, that it's infectious.
Mm.
If you keep associating with them, it can take you over.
Yeah. Well, okay, if you've got psychopaths in charge of the mass media and in charge of the laws and the education, well, no wonder we have mass psychosis right now.
Yeah, and this is why the body of Thomas Sheridan's work, I believe, is some of the most important material that's even online today. And I'd like to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and have a look at this kind of thing, because everybody can have their opinion. People can shoot the messenger or whatever if they want. I mean, it's no never mind to me. But yeah, I think that if we are going to look honestly and accurately at the reason why society's power and control structures have indeed been corrupted, it is because of the propensity for psychopaths to seek out positions of power and control. We'll be right back after the break with Simon Kai Wyatt, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Simon Kai Wyatt is my guest, and you had a video that you wanted to introduce to us.
Yeah, well, this is the video of controversy for brand. It's called the Paxman interview, and we'll play it in a second. But and I'm sure a lot of you, if not all of your listeners, would have heard it. This guy Paxman from the he's a bit of a henchman, you know, a media hitman. So. Let's start the interview and have a listen.
Russell Brand, who are you to edit a political magazine?
Well, I just suppose like a person who's been politely asked by an attractive woman. I don't know what the typical criteria is. I don't know many people that edit political magazines. Boris, he used to do one, didn't he? So I'm a person with crazy hair, quite a good sense of humour, don't know much about politics, I'm ideal.
But is it true you don't even vote?
Yeah, no, I don't vote.
Well, how do you have any authority to talk about politics, then?
Well, I don't get my authority from this pre-existing paradigm, which is quite narrow and only serves a few people. I look elsewhere for alternatives that might be of service to humanity. Alternate means alternate political systems.
Let's pause there. So, do you have a problem with anything you said there?
The current paradigm doesn't serve people, and I want a new paradigm that does. No, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Right. So the other one is not voting. I mean, how many activists do you know that still register to vote?
Increasingly, more and more are refusing to do so.
Yeah, increasingly, but they're still a minority, I'd say. Right.
A minority of activists don't vote.
The people that you rub shoulders with, for instance.
I've never done a poll, actually, but it seems that the journalists that I know very rarely vote because they like to be critical of both sides most of the time, because both sides need to be criticised in order to maintain your journalistic credibility. Activists tend to be involved in political campaigning outside of the elections more than they are even during the elections in some cases. So the short answer is I don't know. But I've got plenty of friends that don't vote and plenty that do. It's kind of half and half, I guess.
Yeah, what I've seen is that a fair proportion of people, they get some information that puts them ahead of the curve or ahead of a lot of people in terms of unraveling the system, and they use that to gain amount of mana, you know, like credibility and the like. And then the next thing you know, a proportion of them end up getting into politics. You know, they want to turn that into votes of submission for the system, or registration to submission for the system for their own gain. Now, I've been battling, you know, the party, for instance, you know, in dialogue with the party. Our New Zealand was an example of that in New Zealand in the last election, where they came out and they said, look, here's the monetary system is the problem, the economics, you know, is not never going to be sorted from that, our national sovereignty and all of this, which as activists we could all agree with, researchers we could all agree with. And then the next thing they're like, so vote for this party, vote for us because we're going to change it, you know. And so when I challenged those ideas and said, well, have you analysed the voting platform, the electoral platform, who sets the rules for who can vote, allowing foreigners to come in who counts the votes, you know, all of these things, plus the fact that you're voting for the Prime Minister who has to be appointed by the Governor General, has to be accepted by the Governor General, who is a military general, by the way. So if you actually did get in, this is when the coups happen, like the Allende thing, you know, where the military just bombed him in his palace. But to bring those questions out, so I think the point I'm trying to make is that this is an idea that we need to discuss out more fully. Do we register to vote or do we not? What are the implications of registering to vote? What are the chances that in the modern times with these modern elections and with the safeguards that they have afterwards, that voting is going to make the difference that's required at this time? Okay. Let's carry on.
There's no way voting makes a difference currently at this point. Otherwise, they'd make it illegal. But anyway, yes, let's continue to roll the clip, please.
Yeah.
I've not invented it yet, Jeremy. I had to do a magazine last week. I've had a lot on my plate. But here's the thing that it shouldn't do. Shouldn't destroy the planet. Shouldn't create massive economic disparity. Shouldn't ignore the needs of the people. The burden of proof is on the people with the power, not people like doing a magazine.
How do you imagine the people get
power? Okay, well, let's pause and discuss that for a second. What do you think of that, Vinny, those ideas?
Yeah, they're pretty straightforward and agreeable, logical and reasonable sounding.
Yeah, I think so too. No cause for alarm there, so let's carry on.
Can we play the clip, please?
Well, I imagine there are sort of hierarchical systems that have been preserved through generations.
They get power by being voted in.
Well, you say that, Jeremy.
You can't even be asked to vote.
It's quite a narrow prescriptive parameter that changes within the
democracy, that's how it works.
Well, I don't think it's working very well, Jeremy, given that the planet is being destroyed, given that there is economic disparity of a huge degree. What are you saying? There's no alternative. There's no alternative.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you can't be asked to vote, why should we be asked to vote?
Okay, let's pause there for a second. Okay, so what this Paxman said in reverse there was quite revealing. He said that every point he makes is poison. Now, here's a guy, Paxman, who's like that the British interviewer who's now over in the, you know, who did something illegal and is now over in the US on TV. Who is that guy? You know the guy?
Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan. He's a hatchet man just like Piers Morgan, right? He's been put on there to score points against and to defame, this is my take on it, to defame this Russell Brand, right? Yeah. And he's trying to needle him and
see, the problem is he's dealing with a comic genius. And in fact, it was Dr. Bill Deagle, I think, he told me once that the two most intelligent career choices, like the career choices where you actually have to have the most highly functioning brain, theoretical physicists and comedians. Isn't that interesting? Don't frickin' start an argument with a comedian because they're usually a hell of a lot smarter than you.
Yeah, well, he's a smart guy. So at this point, this guy, Paxman, has realised every point he's making is poison. And you'll notice after this, he starts to attack Brand personally versus to ask for his ideas. But let's roll with the recording.
Why should we be asked to listen to your political point of view?
You don't have to listen to my political point of view, but it's not that I'm not voting out of apathy. I'm not voting out of absolute indifference and weariness and exhaustion from the lies, treachery, deceit of the political class that has been going on for generations now, and which has now reached fever pitch where we have a disenfranchised, disillusioned, despondent underclass that are not being represented by that political system. So voting for it is tacit complicity with that system, and that's not something I'm offering up.
Okay, let's pause it there.
I'm trying to.
Let's pause it there. Well, I mean, I couldn't say that any better, obviously. How about you, Vinny?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best justification I've ever heard for not voting.
I mean, here for someone having the eloquence, the balls and the platform to put that together and put it out there. People, stop voting, look for another way to make a difference, and we need to make a difference, and here are the problems. This is what he said right up. I mean, have you heard anything else in there, Vinny?
No, not really.
No, I mean he says a lot in 10 seconds, so it's hard to sort of recap it. But from a lawful perspective, this registering to vote, submitting a registration to vote, is exactly what he said. It's tacit. It's actually contract. It's a contract to be represented, and then it doesn't matter after that. So it is consent for the things to continue on. Now, if people are only going to look, have a 3 or 4 year memory span and think, the problem was because the blue party got in again, or it was the red party this time, you know, what they need to do is to look back to when the voting started, you know, look back to when how the system's rolled out. There's been no big change. There's been no big revolution in New Zealand. There's been nothing since the one that took the law of the land and inverted it to law of the water back in 1840. Mm. So you either vote to continue that system that was a revolution against natural law and against the law of the land, speaking in relevance to New Zealand, and in the US it was just a couple of years after that. It's pretty much the same time for all nations. You either consent to that system by registering to vote in it, and then all the shenanigans happen, or you don't vote in it, and we have to put our heads on what would the best model be.
Now, can I also make another interesting relationship here? George Carlin also chose not to vote and was also very vocal about this. Bill Hicks, another noted political comedian, he also was very frustrated with voters and how everybody is a scumbag as well. It seems once you get to the point of intelligence and integrity where you can actually work out what the system is and how it truly operates, your willingness to participate in said system to enslave yourself wanes somewhat.
Yes. You know, we hear a lot of promotion of this book, 1984, because, you know, hey, a lot of those things have happened, and that the author, who was the name? Aldous Huxley, right?
No, George Orwell.
George Orwell. Yes. George Orwell wrote 1984?
Yeah.
Okay.
George Orwell's 1984. He wrote Animal Farm as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who was Aldous Huxley? He was one of the social.
He wrote the Doors of Perception. And he also wrote Brave New World.
Brave New World. That was the one. Yes. Okay. Well, it's sort of like that 1984. Now here we are. We're quite happy to say these, just accept that. But if you actually look at the author and look at his quotes, he's saying, look, we're in the middle of the ultimate revolution where we're going to get people to love their servitude. Why don't we just come and attack the guys that are out there saying it? You know, like the Rockefeller, for instance, you know, in the American Institute, where he said, we've got to thank the global media for their silence.
May I make a point here? Because there's two arguments for this, and I agree with what you're saying. You know, why don't we attack the people who are actually committing the scumbaggery instead of trying to attack the people who aren't, right? The difference being, of course, I believe scrutiny should be applied equally, okay? Once somebody has their guilt proven, then, of course, the scrutiny really, really pays off. But once scrutiny is applied to somebody, say, like Russell Brand, and if it turns out that there is no evidence that he's an agent working for the other side and continuing to attempt to perpetuate scumbaggery systems, then it becomes like, okay, well, we don't have to do that anymore, but it's good that we do this analysis. It's good that we do this criticism in the very first place, because as I mentioned before, that messiah complex where people refuse to question these people who they admire because they're saying things that they like is just as dangerous as the scumbaggery psychopathic complex that we suffer from.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Totally. And I think the maturity of people to get over this looking for a messiah, which I think is one of the things that Russell Brand actually toured the US on, the messiah complex, you know, and next thing you know, he's being accused of putting himself out there as a messiah. You know, it's good that people aren't falling for, you know, or looking for a messiah. At the same time, let's just focus on the ideas and the deeds, you know. What's the best idea and how do we do the deeds? But let's roll with the interview.
And that's not something I'm offering up.
Well, why don't you change it then?
I'm trying to.
Well, why don't you start by voting?
I don't don't think it works. People have voted already, and that's what's created the current paradigm.
When did you last vote?
Never.
You've never, ever voted?
No. Do you think that's really bad?
So you struck an attitude, what, before the age of 18?
Well, I was busy being a drug addict at that point because I come from the kind of social conditions that are exacerbated by an indifferent system that really just administrates for large corporations and ignores the population that it was voted in to serve.
You're blaming the political class of the fact you had...
Okay, let's pause it there.
Yeah.
What do you think of that point, Vinny? I mean, could you agree with it?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was more or less addicted to weed. I mean, weed's not addictive, you know. You can give it up pretty easily. But
different point. But we'll carry on.
Yeah. So when I got arrested for that particular thing, in fact, what Russell Brand there really kind of struck a chord with me, because I what it did is it fell apart the entire system right in front of my eyes, because suddenly, instead of me believing that the cops could be trusted, that if I'm honest with them, it'll work out better for me, and then finding out the direct opposite is true, that not only if I tell them, even if I'm honest with them, they will still lie and make things up, and then it'll be even worse for me because I was honest, because they lie on top of me being honest and incriminating myself. And it occurred to me that the entire paradigm, every single authority figure right at that very point, was full of BS, and it was a completely disillusioning thing. And I think that's what actually brought me into the political activism arena for cannabis activism, which I did for a number of years with activists like Dr. Green Cross and so on and so forth. And so I agree with what he's saying there. It's because if you're in the situation that is exacerbated by the indifference and the scumbaggery of the system, it doesn't work out very well for your belief in the political paradigm, which is complete BS in the first place. It's something that helps you recognize the travesty of it. Yeah. And we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com. My very special guest is Simon Kaiwai, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back after this short break. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're talking about the brand, Russell Brand, that is, with Simon Kaiwai. Now, you've got a number. Did you get those clips and everything organised? We've got some reverse speech or something, don't we?
Yeah, we're going to do that, but we're going to continue with the interview, go through the interview, and then go back to these points and finish off with that.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to go through and finish the interview because we've got a very, very short segment here.
Oh, how long's the segment?
We've got about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So, AFR, if you can play that last of the interview there.
Last of the fact you had a drug problem?
No. I'm saying I was part of a social and economic class that is underserved by the current political system, and drug addiction is one of the problems it creates when you have huge, underserved, impoverished populations. People get drug problems and also don't feel like they want to engage with the current political system because they see that it doesn't work for them. They see that it makes no difference. They see that they're not served.
Well, I say that it doesn't work for them if they don't bother to vote.
Jeremy, my darling, I'm not saying that the apathy doesn't come from us, the people. The apathy comes from the politicians. They are apathetic to our needs. They're only interested in servicing the needs of corporations. Look at what, ain't the Tories going to court and to take the EU to court?
Let's pause there for a second. So there was a study by some Swiss scientists called the Zurich study, and they worked out that over half of the world's trade, and I think it was significantly more than half of the world's trade, was controlled by 100 super entities. Did you see that study?
Yes, I think so. Was that the one that said that there were something along the lines of 17 families controlled 70% of the resources on planet Earth, or something of that nature?
Yes, that's right. So you've got but what it actually did was it showed the legal fiction in corporations, which were like Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, you know, and then all these other ones that I hadn't even heard of that were these super entities that owned a controlling interest in companies that did more than 50% of the world's trade.
Companies like the Carlyle Group, for example.
Yeah, well, companies like the companies that the average Joe works for instance, you know, if they're doing import-export or anything that's highly regulated, you know, we've got cartels dominating, you know, it's not just the military-industrial complex now, it's also food, it's also health, it's also education, you know. And it goes back to these 100 super-entities, and then other people did research into the living, breathing names that were behind those entities. And, of course, you come out with those names. So I happen to agree with Brand that, yes, you know, the voting is a charade. You've got these lineages that have preserved their influence and their power, and he's exposing light on that. Good on him, I say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's continue. Oh, by the way, I sent some files. Did we get that? Oh, 7 minutes.
Yeah, we may not even have enough time.
Bank bonuses. Is that what's happening at the moment in our country? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, there is.
So why am I going to tune in for that?
You don't believe in democracy. No, you want a revolution, don't you?
The planet is being destroyed. We are creating an underclass. We are exploiting poor people all over the world. And the genuine, legitimate problems of the people are not being addressed by our political class.
All of those things may be true.
They are true.
But you took... I wouldn't argue with you about many of them.
Well, how come I feel so cross with you? It can't just be because of that beard. It's gorgeous.
It's possibly because...
And if the Daily Mail don't want it, I do. I'm against them. Grow it longer. You are... Tangle it into your armpit hair.
You are a very true
man. Okay, well, we can stop it there. There's... the big point of contention was what he just said back there, which was this guy Paxman got him to commit to... defining a solution. Before then, Brand was saying, look, I don't know what the solution is. And he needed him and said, you know, come out with the solution. Tell us the solution. And so he said, I think we need a socialist egalitarian system and a massive redistribution of wealth. Now, I would say there's cause for alarm, cause for research into those things, because that's the kind of language that some people are saying to bring in this Fabian socialist, you know, which is communist, basically, system, New World Order system. But if you were in Russell Brand's position and you had to try and convey in words, in a lexicon that people understood, socialist, could that be interpreted to mean social versus antisocial in the context of what he said before, which was... That there's massive poor distribution of wealth, that the needs of the people are not being met, the people are not being represented. Socialist is the practice of being social versus antisocial, which is the system right now. It's not looking after the needs of the people. That's the first one. A socialist egalitarian. Okay, let's look at the word egalitarian. Egalitarian means fear. Now, fear. Okay, so he wants a socially just and fair system. There's no. I put it to you that in the context of what he's saying, there is no reason to focus on this one on the sentence and say he's a Fabian. You know, he's part of the New World Order. The next thing he said is a massive redistribution of wealth. Given that in the context that he's also put the focus on these lineages that have preserved their power and they put the puppet show in front, you know, he's talking about, you know, that beyond the 1%, he's talking about the, you know, the 0.2% that are really pulling the strings. It is a massive redistribution of wealth. If you just take that wealth and equalize that across to make sure that everyone has their needs covered. I think it's a fine aspiration for society. It's a very good start point and a nice way to define it, if indeed that's what he meant.
Yeah.
So, what do you think?
Well, I agree with you. Let's continue on with the video, I think.
I'm trivial.
Yes.
A minute ago, you were having a go at me because I want a revolution. Now
no, I'm
asking.
No, I'm not having a go at you because you want a revolution. Many people want a revolution, but I'm asking you what it would be like.
Well, I think what it won't be like is a huge disparity between rich and poor, where 300 Americans have the same amount of wealth as the 85 million...
Oh, that kind of cut out there.
In poorest Americans, where there is an exploited and underserved underclass that are being continually ignored, where welfare is slashed, while Cameron and Osborne go to court to defend the rights of bankers to continue receiving their bonuses. That's all I'm saying.
What's the scheme? That's all I'm asking. What's the scheme? You talk vaguely about revolution. What is it?
I think a socialist egalitarian system based on the massive redistribution of wealth, heavy taxation of corporations and massive responsibility for energy companies and any companies exploiting the environment. I think they should be I think the very concept of profit should be hugely reduced. David Cameron says profit isn't a dirty word. I say profit is a filthy word, because wherever there is profit, there is also deficit. And this system currently doesn't address these ideas. And so why would anyone vote for it? Why would any...
Okay, that's another point that people have attacked him on, is this profit thing. When he says profit is a dirty word, and hello, he's worth £15 million. He's a hypocrite. I have to challenge people's perspective on that. You know, just because someone's rich doesn't make them a bad guy. You know, he's got just as much to lose as us, really. And he's got a great talent. So... let's not bash the guy just because he's now using the influence that he's got, and he's got some money, he's got a talent, to say he must be part of them, one of them.
Mm. Well, you have a look and see that anybody can say anything, and you can twist it, distort it, manipulate it, and say, oh, I think he meant that, or I think he meant this, or I think he's this, or I think he's that. And you basically have no idea, because let's look at the context here, Simon. We're looking at only a single conversation with the man, okay, by somebody who is a pretty poor interviewer, if I might say so.
Let's
get into these reversals then. Which one are we going to play first? We only have 2 minutes left in the broadcast.
Okay, so let's play play socialist, if you could.
I think a socialist egalitarian system based on the massive redistribution of wealth...
Okay, now play the socialist.
What did he say?
What he said was the light needs to shift.
You can
play it again if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we've got is we've got these psychopaths following this agenda with the microphone and the cameras pointing on them, and they're saying the same stuff. Economic growth, free trades, technology, all this stuff,
Yeah.
He's saying we need to shift the light.
90 seconds.
Okay. Let's do the next one. It's let's do the fix the earth.
System.
Okay, he said socialist egalitarian system, and when he was saying egalitarian, his truth is we must fix the earth. Okay, let's do sleepless.
Distribution of wealth.
When he says we need a massive distribution of wealth, in reverse he's saying it's why I went sleepless. Let's play it again. Now another reversal earlier in the speech said he's been trying to find the solution for 5 years. So what I can take from that is that he actually he got insomnia from this. He got restless. He's losing sleep over it. Here he is making a lot of money, sitting on a lot of money, and he sees the problems of the world, and he's been trying to work it out. And he's been sleepless. So he's a motivated guy. He's been searching for it for 5 years. He doesn't have the answer. And let's play the last one, Elite.
AFR, can we bring the feed down on the music? Then we've got about 45 seconds. Can you play that last clip, Elite, and then we've got to go. Waiting on that last clip, Elite, then. Can't hear it, AFR.
Oh, I didn't have it. Okay.
Oh, we don't have it. That's no problem.
Yes,
all right.
That's all right. So the point he made massive taxation, he said, we must not let the elite usurp us.
That's a good point. That is amazing. We must not let the elite usurp us. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.